I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from Park City Television. Thanks for joining us.
Auditory ossicles massaged on 90.1 FM WUSB in Stony Brook, alternating Thursday mornings from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. It's a club epic. It's a man.
Day in and day out. So they sat and listened to the radio day in and day out. So they sat and listened to the radio day in and day out. So they sat and listened to the radio day in and day out to see what it was that was popular.
Yes, they did. They sat and listened to the radio. And hopefully you're stepping right up, sitting right down, and buckling up, settling into this radio station, WUSB Stony Brook. That's 90.1 megahertz on the FM band. And if you're not using traditional analog radio, you can stream everything from the station at WUSB.FM. Just one note with regard to that particular show, we're not exactly sure if it's current. So, what you can do is go to WUSB.FM and look at the current schedule, and if any changes have been made, that information will be there. And you can get turned on to a lot of really, really interesting programming. And coming right up, in relation to interesting programming, is Off the Wall. Hello, welcome. You're listening to Off the Wall with Emmanuel, and I'm Kyle.
And I'm Emmanuel.
You are Emmanuel, and you're over there. It's good that you are there, and I'm here. Well, and everyone listening...
I don't know if the barrier is necessary, but fine. If you feel I should be behind a wall, then so be it.
It is a wall. It's not a snowy wall, but it's a wall of sorts, I gather.
You just won't see the happiness in my face when I say something that makes sense.
Okay.
That could happen this week. I'm due.
We'll see. So to finish the thought, it's fantastic that everyone is everywhere else. And we're glad that everywhere else includes listening to us.
For everybody else. Yeah, I can see that, I suppose.
You're there, I'm here, and they're everywhere else.
But everywhere else isn't one place, it's everywhere else.
Everywhere else that they are.
And also in time, too. There's all different time things going on. There's people that are listening to us in the future right now. Well, not right now, but in the future it's right now.
They will be listening in the future, yeah.
Oh my God, this is really... And then, of course, the signal goes out into space, so people who aren't even humans will be listening to us, and who knows how time works out there. What are they supposed to do?
Well, it's not actually something we're going to discuss tonight.
Okay.
But it's a good question.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we're not going to discuss it, because I'm not prepared for that.
Okay.
I am not prepared as much as Washington, D.C., is not prepared for snow. There, how's that? How's that for a comparison?
Ooh, huh? Burn.
Yeah. It is a burn, because look at this headline. New York rebounds after blizzard. Washington shuts down government. That was the headline 2 days ago, and they're still closed. They're still closed.
Still. And not out of too much of a crisis, right? I mean, it's a slight... It's a slight crisis.
Yeah, a slight crisis. I mean, New York City got more snow than Washington, D.C. They did. Look it up. And New York City dug out on Sunday. Here it is Tuesday, and D.C. is still shut down.
It's almost as though they're using it... it's like they're using it to their advantage. Maybe to get out of doing some things.
Well, I just wonder if maybe this is what we... People always complain about the inaction in Washington, and this is a good example of it. Maybe it's time to move the Capitol back to New York, because that's where it was at one point. And things got done back then. There was universal health care back when the Capitol was in New York. Look that up, too. There were all kinds of high-speed rail all sorts of infrastructure improvements that fell apart once they moved the capital to D.C. So, yeah, worth considering. But, yeah, it's good. It's an improvement. What we had in the last week, we had a blizzard, a real blizzard, bona fide blizzard.
Yes, yeah. I'm sorry. I was just thinking about how that would affect the values of the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
The blizzard.
No, having the center seat of government in New York with all of those values you have up there.
I forgot about what I said just a minute ago. Okay, yeah, well, it probably would, because then you'd have people, you know, who represents New York, people like Donald Trump, people like Michael Bloomberg. That's how the country sees us.
Yeah.
They see us as billionaires that they really do. They see people from New York as these rich idiots who... aren't clued in to the rest of the nation. And we're here to tell you that's not the way it really is.
That is not the way it is. They are... Yeah. Yeah. So, they are... they're welcome to those thoughts, I guess. But we won't be going into that topic either, as far as changing the seat of government and small crises... but beyond that, we come back to politics somehow. Isn't that funny?
Well, it's hard to avoid these days. When we have election campaigns that last for several years, almost as long as the terms themselves. It's kind of hard to, but you know, it's moved beyond politics and into kind of the world of a circus, because that's what we're seeing displayed. We're seeing all sorts of bizarre behavior and opinions and declarations, and you have to wonder, where is this going to wind up? In, you know, the Iowa caucus. What, uh-huh. What day do you think the Iowa caucus is? Do you know?
Oh, golly. I'm going to say it's a Tuesday.
That's what I said. I said that earlier. And then I found out the truth, and I laughed at myself for being so wrong. The Iowa caucus is on Monday. It's next Monday.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought it was on Tuesday. Mm. I don't know why everything is on Tuesday in this country, but it just happens to be that way. But yeah, Iowa caucus is on Monday. New Hampshire primary, that's on Tuesday.
Is it?
So in one week, we are going to know a lot more as far as what the future is. Will Trump prevail in Iowa? We'll know that next week.
Whatever you say, just don't say we're going to refine the pool of candidates, because there's nothing refined about very many of them.
I wasn't going to use that word at all. I was going to use the word cull.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I kind of figured that would.
That's like sticking more puppies in the freezer.
I had something a little bit warmer in mind, but yeah, that's in 1 week we are going to know a lot more about where this race is going, and I don't think that's really fair. I don't think that's fair. Why does Iowa always get to decide these things? By the time it even comes to New York, I think it's going to be April or May. Same thing with Washington State. It's, you know, it's already, people have dropped out based on what's happened in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina and places like that. You know, it'd be fine if it was a random thing every election cycle, but it's always the same. Iowa is always first. Doesn't it seem like they have too much of a say in who the candidates will be? I'm an independent, so I don't even get to vote in the primaries in this state. I don't get to say anything until next November, this November coming up. And by then, it's going to be down to two people, and I would have had absolutely no influence in that whatsoever, except being on the radio.
Or the unlimited ability to support whomever is running as an independent, which I don't see you're doing. You're just sitting here, you know, in your armchair. I mean, you should be out campaigning.
Well, first of all, you can't see the armchair from behind the barrier.
Okay.
I should be out campaigning. Well, first of all, you say independent. And there is an independent candidate, even though he's running for the on a Democratic ticket. Bernie Sanders is an independent senator from Vermont.
People have gotten that wrong, right? We've seen that.
On TV, yeah.
They label him one or the other. He's a Democratic candidate, but he's a independent.
Well, I don't know how wrong it is then, because they say D-VT. VT, of course, being Vermont.
Right.
D being Democrat. If he's running on the Democratic ticket, I guess he is a Democrat.
You have to say he's a Democrat, yeah.
But if you're referring to him as a senator, then you have to say I-VT because he's an independent.
Right. It's sort of an intelligence test, because if you know Bernie Sanders well enough, you'll realize he's actually an independent, but he's running on the Democratic ticket.
I would like to know Bernie Sanders. He seems like a fun guy to know.
Yeah.
To order a sandwich with at a deli, you know, somebody like that. Just he's a guy I can tell a good story.
Yeah.
And I was very impressed. We saw the town hall last night with the Democratic candidates, all three of them. Yeah, O'Malley's still there. And Sanders just has this really respectful air about him. He doesn't attack other people. And I have to say, that's such a refreshing change from what we've seen on the other side of the aisle, where there's still a whole bunch of candidates that are all tearing into each other and of course, attacking the Democrats as well and anyone else that gets in their way. And, you know, it's embarrassing to see that. It's fascinating to see it, but it's also embarrassing. And he is just a refreshing change, as far as I can tell. Somebody who's taking the high road and actually addressing issues that we all want to talk about. Things like universal health care and Wall Street and inequities in income and all sorts of social issues that we talk about amongst our circles, but never before to this degree in the mainstream.
Coalescing the ideas, absolutely, into a movement which is resonating. And just to add, those states you said are sort of last, they don't get to decide per se, they will still caucus. And that's an important thing to be involved with, and you're hearing a lot about that now because of Iowa. You know, instead of the P word, polls, you hear Trump saying now, how important it is for people to go caucus, the religious appealing to them, trying to get people to go out, because that's a big part of what of how the state goes. So each district is broken up, and I know for a fact I've caucused in Washington, and I know that still goes on. And it's really interesting, a Democratic caucus, because you come in, you're basically with whomever shows up that's geographically about where you are from, and it ends up being like six or a dozen people. It might be bigger in bigger states. And you sit there, and people make a case for one candidate or the other, and out of the 12 of you, you put in vote. Whoever wins out of that small vote represents that district within the state, and then you add up all the districts, and then you have which way your candidate goes.
A couple of things. We don't caucus in New York.
You don't.
I wouldn't know how to begin to caucus.
It's interesting.
I would like to. I'd like the opportunity, but I don't get the opportunity because I live in New York.
So. I got to tabulate my district's votes.
Well, here's my question. As a...
You get responsibility.
And I never heard caucus used as a verb, but I guess that's the way it works. As a caucusee, is that what you were?
It's not coxswain.
Caucuser. Well, whatever. The point is, it's like an alien way of doing things, and it's within our own country. But, okay, as somebody who was participating in that, what would happen if say, Sanders had a lot of followers, but they were all shy people? People who couldn't really talk in a group and convince others, you know, but he had more supporters, but the really intimidating vocal people were Clinton supporters. Wouldn't that put them at a disadvantage just because of their unique personality traits?
It is true that to participate in democracy, you have to participate. That mm-hmm. is true. So if you are shy and don't feel comfortable speaking up maybe in a group of people in your district that you know might have a lot of opposition candidates, but you're only going to go to the caucus for your party. So you actually won't be exposed as much, but you will be exposed to, like, say if there was a Republican caucus that we were being a part of, yeah, you'd be sitting down. There might be three people for Cruz, six people for Trump, one meek person for Fiorina, and you know, somebody who Chris Christie owes a hot dog or something also there.
I think the meek person would be for Bush, actually.
Fine.
And they'd have to stand up to all the Trump loudmouths.
Right, because he's low energy. And Ben Carson would be like asleep under a chair, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Or his supporters. But the point is, you would have to face off. You'd have to actually have a discussion with members of your district, and then they would do a vote where you go around. It is, I think, a ballot, so you count up paper, you know, people write it down.
Is it random? You get thrown with other people from your general area? Do you get to pick which group you want to be in?
No. So your district, your legislative district groups people who are from your party in groups by district. So mm-hmm. they might not be your neighbor per se, but they'll be about you, right? They'll live about your neighborhood. They'll be in the vicinity, the quote, in that
district.
There's
enough for several groups in your area. What I'm asking is, do you get to pick, or are you just thrown in like a random lot of people?
I don't know if I'm saying this clearly. It's done by your address. You get to pick where you live, yeah, mm-hmm. but it's done by address.
Okay.
So you'll be in the group that represents your district. Like if I was District 34,
uh-huh.
Whomever else lived within the boundaries of that district. This is why coming up with legislative districts and gerrymandering is such a big deal.
Right.
And voter turnout and stuff like that. But, yeah, so all the Democrats that are physically, right. their address resides in that district, they would all be lumped in District 34 or whatever
you are. How big is each group?
Also interesting. It's based on population and how the district lines are drawn.
But I'm talking about the group where you're talking to other people. How big is that group?
Like I said, about, you know, half a dozen, maybe 12 people in your district, an average district. There might be larger, some smaller.
What I'm saying is there's more than six people in a district. So if you, say, have 100 people in your district, do you get to pick which people in your district you get to caucus with? Or is it assigned only your neighbors, or is it just something that you have to report to this particular table or whatever it is?
Yeah, okay. So once you get an idea of where your legislative group is hanging out, mm-hmm. yeah, it's think of like a school gym. right. and a paper sign on a stick, you know, a yardstick that says 34, you go over and sit at that cafeteria table with all the other group 34 people,
okay.
and yeah, you could sit by whoever you're most comfortable sitting next to. If you are comfortable sitting next to the 500-pound Hispanic woman, then sit next to her. If you want to go
well,
sit next to
obviously you can
some...
sit next to whoever you want to sit. And I was just saying the 34, that's what I was after. So you get thrown into number 34, you have no say in that. It's just...
Think school gym, paper right. taped to the wall, go stand over there, then you go break off and sit down right. or... decide you'll sit there and have your discussion. People maybe make a case if they're passionate about one candidate or the other, and then you do a vote, then somebody tabulates it, and then that becomes the vote for your district.
Okay, no, I understood that part. It's just how they distribute the people is what I'm curious about. I wish we did that here. I wish we had caucuses here. It'd be really kind of cool.
It's really interesting.
Uh-huh.
It feels like you're a part of it, right? It feels like you're there. You're like, you know, you're talking to people, your neighbors. You know, you've seen all the signs. You've been through the ads. It's that critical point where you really actually feel like you're a part of the process and you're going to solidify what your district thinks about it.
I assume you're not allowed to record this, right? People can't go with their smartphones and basically, because I've never seen one. I have no idea what this is like. I'd love to participate in it, but unfortunately I'm not allowed to because of various rules.
Well, they put signs up, political signs. People wear buttons and pins and shirts, and I mean, you see a lot of the paraphernalia, campaign paraphernalia, and people will put signs up near their district once they find out where the district is and
uh-huh.
try to do, like, last-minute campaign. Sometimes even your... like a representative, like a Democratic senator or a federal representative will come
mm-hmm.
and be a part of the caucus at that particular location for a region. So someone
wow.
that is in charge of the entire metropolitan area might visit wherever the caucus is going on to just observe and glad hand and that kind of thing.
So is somebody in charge? Is there like a foreman or something? Or somebody who tabulates? And how is that assigned?
Yeah, so that's done through the, like, elections commission or whomever is, I guess what you would say is administering voting. So the sort of group of people that would be wheeling in the voter booths and stuff at your elementary school, that organization or the equivalent would then be sort of chartered or responsible for setting it up,
mm-hmm.
Organizing it, and communicating and making sure it runs smoothly, and then officiating whoever is assigned to add up the votes, officiating that process, and then taking the results and officially entering it as a result for your district.
Well, like I said, in a week we'll know more about how all that turned out, especially in places like Iowa.
It'd be great. I mean, you could go and meet all the people you disagree with. It'd be, like, a really fun time.
Well, then that leads me to my next question. Are guns allowed in these things?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Right away, that's... Well, I think that's a violation of my Second Amendment
no,
rights.
It's
I should be able to bring a gun
nope,
to the
sorry,
bowling booth.
Middle
really.
Schools... Sorry, no. You can't... I'm sorry. No firearms... Concealed weapons are not allowed on... school grounds in Washington State, or in bars, or anywhere else in Seattle area.
You're talking about Washington.
I'm talking about Washington.
I'm sure in Texas, it's almost mandatory that you bring a gun.
In Texas, they can holster their guns in their mouths, I believe. that's where they hold them.
Wow. You know, speaking of guns, I just wanted to share this story while we have a chance. Because it's classic. A dispute over a $25 service charge led to a shootout at a Mississippi gun store that killed a father and son, and another father and son were injured. Jason McLemore and his son, Jacob McLemore, were killed in the shooting this Saturday at the McLemore Gun Shop, located near Picayune, Mississippi. Audi McCool and his son, Michael McCool, who apparently were not so McCool after all, were both seriously wounded. Basically, here's what happened. They dropped the gun off for repair. Apparently you can do that, drop a gun off for repair. The two men then got into an argument with the gun shop owner's wife, who's a co-owner of the store, who was working at a clerk, and that's about the $25 service fee, because the gun apparently had not been repaired, but they still were charging the service fee. So then... she sent a text to her husband asking for help, and then, of course, he and his son arrived. I don't know if guns were ablazing, but the situation quickly escalated and shots were fired. That's what's going on at gun shops in Mississippi. $25 service fees and gunfire erupting afterwards.
So this speaks to the larger problem of credit card fees and merchant processing. It's a thing.
I don't know if it's credit card fees. I think it might just a gun fee.
Oh, that was a $25 gun fee for bringing it in.
All this talk about, you know, guns make us a polite society. No, they don't. They just make us a scared society, and people get angry about various issues, whether it's traffic issues or service fee issues or family issues, and they just have something that's a lot more convenient to use because it's right there.
And it completely short-circuits human discussion, because impulsiveness then can completely bypass a situation that's, yeah, hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have to talk. We have to disagree a little. Yeah, I might raise my voice. I might raise my voice, E.
Well, are you armed? Because I'd be more concerned if you raised your voice and you were armed, you know, because then I might say something that would infuriate you even more, and then I would have to, you know, try to figure out where my gun is. And
or you'd be unable to express yourself. You'd feel stifled. You'd feel like, I just can't speak my mind around him.
I'd feel like the shy guy in the caucus.
He gets so mad. And
yeah. That's why shy people should bring guns to caucuses.
Yeah.
So that they could be heard.
Mm-hmm.
No, seriously, it's insane what's been going on. We saw a mass shooting actually in the northern part of Canada this past week, which is a rarity. It hasn't happened since I think it was the 70s. It happened in Montreal.
It was alarming, and it was covered really widely. I mean, around the country and the world, I think a lot of people took note.
Yeah, and unlike in this country, when something like this happens, they're focusing on the actual problems. They're focusing on the native communities,
yes.
How they're cut off, how there is nothing for people to do in many of these communities,
yes.
How that could have contributed to this, mental issues, anger issues, and, of course, access to firearms. But it's not as much of a big deal up there because they tend to not obsess over it as much, the ownership of firearms. So they're focusing more on
systemic stuff.
Exactly.
What led to this, the actual individual who was pushed this far. We actually heard a little excerpt of his grandmother asking people to forgive him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, forgiveness. Imagine that. It really, really just tears you apart. I mean, it's a really sad thing. And, this is something we should probably talk about, spend a lot more time on it. But I will say, it's amazing the distinction between First Nations
mm-hmm.
and Native Americans, and it's really worthy of a long discussion. And I mean, we should actually give it more time, but it is criminal. It's really disgusting.
First Nations being Canada, Native Americans being the United States. Okay.
Yeah, and we just don't honor Native Americans in the same way. It
well,
is relegated. It is pushed aside.
We do name our villages after them. Setauket, Patchogue, you know. No, they're not here anymore.
Not the same.
They massacred them, but still we named them. Okay, all right. I thought maybe they would count for something.
What I'm talking about is the fact that Canada can actually say, this is a part of our problems, our ongoing work to recognize First Nations communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big part because a lot of those communities are very remote. Logistically,
mm-hmm.
in the far north,
yes.
And they're spread out, and they persist. They have a lot of what their culture, I mean, their culture has not changed as profoundly. In the States, it's a bit different. You still have Native American communities, but they haven't been able to preserve their heritage. They do,
mm-hmm.
but it has not been honored. And we really have missed that, and I think it's something that Canada, it's something we as a country could look at, because Canada's working on it. They're aware, and the proof, I would argue, is if you look around in Canadian media, there is, you know, radio, there's television, there's a lot of support, of recognition for those communities. Granted, it may be a larger community and so on, but it really, there's no equivalent here. I mean, we complain about, you know, there's no NASA, there's this, you know, what TV or what radio we'd like to see. Add to that Native American news. We should have a national Native American news.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm so happy to hear someone else say that, because we don't have that. There is no Native American television channel. I'm sure there probably are radio programs. In fact, we used to air some on WBAI, but not nearly enough. There should be a nationwide network that everybody knows they can listen to and learn from. It's vastly important. And in Canada, they do have that. They have APTN. We get on the Canadian dish, we get two channels of that, Aboriginal People's Television Network. And you learn a lot about the communities that way. It's not to say that they've solved the problems. There's a lot of problems still. They're still dealing with the community schools issues over the past a bunch of decades, where kids were basically tortured in these schools that they were forced to attend. It's a dark part of Canada's history, but like you said, they are dealing with it.
Yeah, they actually want to open it up. And I just think, like you said, there are regional like Native American networks. I've actually met a producer of a local, very young guy. He was doing some of the programming for a Native American sort of public access-y channel. I don't know how they're doing now, but it was not even on local cable, mm-hmm. right? They did not have an over-the-air presence. It maybe had a small over-the-air presence on that reservation, but it's terrible. I mean, that's just incredibly disappointing, and it is all around us in this country, and I really would love to see a lot more of those voices. That community is a huge part of our heritage, and we talk a lot about diversity and the kinds of black and brown voices and shows and stars and influence, and I think this gets relegated, and it's a part of that. It's the same movement, and it's as important. So that's just a little side note and something probably we will devote a little bit more time to, because I was really, really that occurred to me in the context mm-hmm. of that story with this young man and just how people are coming together and actually approaching this and not adding it to a list of something. They're making the distinction that this is a troubled community, and this is a side effect, a byproduct of how that community has been treated. And I just don't see the same sort of analysis. And I guess that's a cultural thing, because Canada does not have the same violence and attitudes towards guns. When something like this happens, it's really an anomaly. Mm-hmm. And it really makes people look at the larger systemic issues that they're already aware of and working on. We haven't even become aware and are not working on these things as we should. We've kind of relegated Native Americans in a lot of ways. So anyway, definitely a sort of footnote to that story.
I suggest people actually go to the source, listen to some Canadian media. As it happens, it's a program we try to listen to as much as possible. It's kind of the equivalent of All Things Considered, but for Canada, and I think much, much better, because what they do is they talk to just individual, regular people on the street and make it sound so incredibly interesting. If you go to cbc.ca/AIH, I think they have an archive, and I know they're dealing with this particular story and the many things behind it.
There's a lot of new programming, too. They're really trying stuff out, and I would love to see that kind of adventurousness in our own media, commercial, non-commercial, whatever, really programming to these communities and letting these communities do the programming in themselves, working with them in partnerships and collaborations. One other program that comes to mind that's really fantastic is called Unreserved. Produced by Native First Nations community members in Canada. We could do something equivalent. NPR could easily do something equivalent.
You know
what? It doesn't have to be, but it could be.
USB can. We're here at a radio station.
Absolutely.
If there is a program out there, and if our listeners know of one, please let us know. otw@2600.com. Write to us. This is a great opportunity for us to carry something like that, because, yeah, there is so much culture that we are not exposed to, so much
internships and collaborations. One other program that comes to mind that's really fantastic is called Unreserved.
Rug and Erased, and that should never be the case. So much that we can benefit from and share. And at least, you know, in Canada, problems that they have, all sorts of horrible things involving the Native population there, but there's progress of a sort. You know, we talk about APTN as one network, but you actually see Native people a lot more often on major networks as well, in programs, in the news.
Yes.
It's covered.
Or a music festival. They'll do a whole music festival of Native
yes.
voices.
Yes.
I've seen that on some of the music channels. We could easily do this, and yet it's just a bottom line thing. Oh, we don't have the viewership. The audience isn't there. Why don't you try this stuff? Create some good content, and you'll attract that kind of community. And that could be an incredibly powerful thing. I would love to see that Native American community flourish and have some of their cultural history and issues acknowledged and looked at in at least some of the ways Canada is trying to deal with, like, the provincial schools and on and on. We have equivalent stories here. Do not doubt that.
Yes. And, you know, throughout the world, too. You know, we're seeing the whole refugee situation turning ugly in so many places. Even Scandinavia, a place I always thought was tolerant and open, getting less and less so every day. Denmark, they want to basically confiscate everything that refugees own as kind of a penalty for being a refugee. We're seeing all kinds of racist crimes taking place in countries like Sweden. And it's really disgusting compared to the openness that we saw when this crisis first began. Crises don't end overnight. It takes time. It takes a lot of adjustment. And it's disappointing to see the way that this has been going, and I'm worried where it's going to go in months ahead.
Yeah, we can't normalize that. We have to speak out and say, look, the circumstances themselves, they are demanding compassion. We're in a position to be passionate and to provide for people, and in this context, and it's very. It's saddening to see very, very wealthy countries. Sweden and Norway, look at their currency.
Mm-hmm.
They are very wealthy. Go get a busboy job there. Seriously. I mean,
yeah.
The Norwegian crown will treat you right. It's shameful that they're just going to quietly sort of institute things that are profoundly racist.
And think about this. If you lived in Syria all of your life, and you're willing to move to a place like Sweden and go really far north, because that's where they're sending a lot of these people, and you're willing to make that's a sacrifice. Because you're changing everything in your life. That should be taken seriously. That should be taken seriously, because they are completely throwing things upside down just to survive, just to have a future. So maybe it means more to them than we believe it does, and maybe it should be honored. And yeah, I was looking at an interview on Euronews, I think it was yesterday, a program called Reporters. They were talking to this guy, and he said, give me 5 years, and I will be one of the best chefs in this country, because I have all these different recipes for chickens, and I can do anything with chicken. He was so passionate about that he could really excel at this. Yeah. And that's exactly the kind of things that we need. I mean, immigration is what builds nations.
Yeah, they're willing to take that risk. Think of the economic risk. I mean, starting out, you're in a new place.
Mm-hmm.
You want to create a business. You want to do there. You're going to move quickly. You're going to invest quickly. You're going to get your community. You're going to get friends to help you out, to get you started, to establish, get some roots. That is really good.
Yeah.
That is good for culture. That's good for the vast array of food and service stuff that we seem to be doing so much of these days. Why not? Why not welcome that?
And the initial words of Angela Merkel when she was basically saying we have to do this, it was one of the most amazing things to hear. You know, someone I don't agree with on a lot of things. But wow, did she get that right? Of course, now she's paying the price for it from closed-minded people. Hey, you want to take phone calls this week?
Yeah.
Are we ready to go into delay?
Okay. Yeah, I just I have to remember this is immediate, and then I wait on the okay. So, and then I want to do this.
Yes, you want to do that.
And then just do that, and then do this while that's doing that.
Oh, he's here. We're gonna hear from him.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's.
You know, I love technical stuff, so any of you technical people out there, you might know this name.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
He couldn't make it in to the studio, I guess. Well, living in living overseas, I guess you can't always make it to the studio. Well, okay, that was smooth. I think that worked out.
Good. Good. I'm glad. Except this was wrong.
Oh, no, that was right. Wait, was it down?
I think it was down.
Oh, Kyle.
Oh, you know, can I just play that anyway, just so people know what we're talking about?
Well, you're going to play it. No, you're going to play it 7 seconds, yeah, in the future.
All right, I'll play it.
Play it now in case that you didn't hear it.
All right, so you all know who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Hello there, my name is Thomas Dolby, and you're listening to the airwaves of WUSB Stony Brook.
See, now I feel like a phony because I was referring to that as if I had heard it, and actually I hadn't because it didn't play. At least I think we didn't. We don't know what's going over the air because we can't hear the future.
Yes, but you had no direct hand in that. You're not a phony. I'm the phony because I did it wrong.
Yeah, but I lied. I said, I pretended.
You lied because you thought we had done what was truthful, but we lied because I'm technically inept. Anyway, 631-622-6901. We have several calls on the line. Everyone wants to talk to us.
All right, take a number.
All right. You are on Off the Wall.
Yes, I got to be quick about this. But I do kind of agree about we should have a similar program to the indigenous people in this country, just like Canada's trying to do.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that could be done there.
Yes, but I just wanted to say something about that shooting.
In Canada?
There was a shooting, I think, maybe in the early 2000s, late 90s.
Okay.
Where a man shot up, I think, a women's rights place.
It was a women's school, I think, in Montreal, and I think it was longer ago than that, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, we don't mean to say that they don't ever have this stuff, but it's certainly an anomaly. But, yeah, I hear you. It's definitely, when you have years between these things, it's something to be sort of envious of, I think.
Mm.
Anyway, thanks for your call. Where are you calling from?
From a car.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you later. Thanks. Hello, you're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty well. How's it going?
Good. I'm doing all right, thank you. I wanted to mention way back, you guys, I forget exactly what the lead-in was, but you were talking about the Pilgrim State building on, I guess that's Comac Road in Deer Park. You were, you know, talking about, you know, before they imploded it and all like that.
Actually, the building was called Edgewood. It was adjacent to the Pilgrim State facility, yes.
Right, that's the one. I think right after high school, about 2000, it was right after high school, I was working in a security company. I actually lived in that building for 3 days, myself and a dog, to make sure people didn't hang out in it before they imploded it.
Wow.
And it was actually a very, very spooky place. As a matter of fact, I think it might have been October, because I think you might have been talking about different places on the island. Spooky places.
Yes, that was definitely one of them.
And we might have been were we talking about Kings Park as well.
Well, Kings Park was that's another abandoned mental facility. But Edgewood was this big looming, I think, 10-story building right on Comac Road, and you would just see it coming up in the darkness. And a bunch of friends of mine and myself, we wanted to go into it once, but we scared ourselves out of it, and we just kind of walked up to it. We saw signs. We saw old wheelchairs and various signs that nasty things happened inside there.
You spent some time there. What was it like inside?
It was cavernous, basically. there was, when you, on the main, I guess I'll call it the main floor, when you, you know, just walk in from the woods there.
Sure.
There were stairs that went downstairs, you know, underneath of the ground, I guess in the foundation.
Wow.
There were little tiny rooms all over the place, and like you said, you know, whoever knows what went on in that place.
I just remember one sign I could see from the outside. It had an arrow on it and the word adolescence. So adolescents go this way for your lobotomy or whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. It was a pretty spooky place, but
wow.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Well, thanks for sharing. What a coincidence. That's great that you were able to call in and bring us back there a little bit.
Yeah, I also wanted to mention that in reference to Germany, I have a friend of mine who lives in there, and she, you know, she's German. She's lived there all her life,
uh-huh.
And she was telling me, you know, after all the Syrians or whoever else, you know, came there, she was walking down the street, and this is in Stuttgart.
Okay.
And she was telling me, now I believe her, but I mean, she was telling me that people were harassing her on the street, uh-huh. telling her that God, you know, likes modesty. You know, she's a woman. She wears short skirts or whatever, you know.
Right.
And she was telling me that, you know, it was actually pretty scary, and that these people, all of a sudden, you know, she's been in Germany all her life, and all of a sudden these people who have not been there for very long are all of a sudden telling her what to do. And she was kind of scared about it.
Yeah, this is something, it is a concern. It's a culture clash. You'll experience the same thing in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. If you ride your bike through there, if you're a woman, you ride your bike through there, and you're somewhat scantily clad, they will stop you and say this, basically the same thing, that God likes modesty. Again, culture clashes that need to be addressed and resolved, but to simply say all of these people don't belong here because they believe in different things and they're intimidating us, we need dialogue. We need dialogue. We need it soon.
I had a woman on an airplane tell me I was disgusting because I picked my nose once, you know. I mean, everybody's telling you what to do.
How on an airplane, Kyle?
Yeah, she was sitting next to me, and I, you know, brushed my nose, and then she told me it was disgusting and, like, handed me a tissue and was, like, chiding me over this.
Wow.
And I just wanted to be left alone. I didn't want to talk to her, but, that you know, I was being disgusting and not modest with my boogers.
Stop flying first class. This won't happen.
But, right. No, I hear what you're saying, man. That is... Absolutely, that is, you know, I think there's ways we feel about it, you know, personally, but then there is the attitude and actually approaching it with some sensitivity, because, you know, I wouldn't want to be told that I'm being immodest or something, and I would have a couple things to say about that. My voice might change a little, but reactions can be as important as what's going on. So I mean, it must be tricky for her.
It is as wrong, though, to generalize and to say that this represents a group, represents refugees in general, as it is for refugees to think that a Pegida rally in Dresden represents Germans.
Mm.
It's basically a bunch of people in a crowd that feel emboldened by that, that are acting like bullies. And they need to be addressed and challenged and overridden. And I hope it gets to that stage.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, authority is there, and people ought not to feel unsafe. Yeah, I mean, an opinion's one thing, but castigating a young woman for just going about her business when you're maybe not so familiar with the cultural traditions of the area, I don't know. It's a little presumptuous to me.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. I'll let somebody else get on.
Where are you calling from?
Taking my call. I appreciate it.
Okay. We never find out where they're calling from.
I don't think people want to tell us where they're calling
from. I think they hear the question half the time. 631-632-6901 is our telephone number.
Great calls tonight.
Yeah, really good. And you can add your call to that.
Or OTW. At 2600.com for a text-based electronic mail message.
Yes, that you'll feel good about sending. Hey, you know, we were in Riverhead today. I learned, thanks to my smartphone, I learned that there's a place called Riverside right next to Riverhead. I didn't know this.
It's beside the river.
Because my phone said I was in Riverside. I'm like, River? You mean Riverhead? No, it turns out right next to Riverhead is on the other side of the river, because there is a river in Riverhead, is a place called Riverside that happens to be in the town of Southampton, which I didn't know came that close to the town of Riverhead, as opposed to the village of Riverhead.
They couldn't be outdone.
But, I mean, how do I not know the names of places within miles of where I've lived all my life?
That's what I love about quirky, cool places. I feel the same freaking way about Seattle.
Uh-huh.
Like, there are a lot of roads I've never been down in that area. I've been on a lot of them, and I know that place really, really well. But it's just, it's always new. There's always some new way. That's a great reason to go to places you haven't been before that you're curious about, or take the long way.
But these are places I've been to, and I still don't know them. And it's not just roads, it's entire communities.
It's not your fault.
I don't know. I guess I need to look at my phone more, because I never would have learned about this if I hadn't looked at my phone and thought it was wrong. Of course, my phone is never wrong. It's always the authority figure telling me what's what.
If
you've found a new community, please call us, 631-632-6901. We'd love to hear about what part of town you just discovered.
Yeah. And there are little nooks and crannies around, you know, places like Pequot and Nissaquag, and named after Native Americans, by the way. Little places that you might not know existed.
Or just Quiog.
Or Quag.
Quag.
Or East. No, Quiog is next to Quag.
Oh, Quag and Quiog.
I don't know how they get mail out there.
I have a friend with family out in Quag.
And we also hung out by the train station in Riverhead, which you would think, Riverhead being a pretty big village. It's really pretty big. It doesn't seem like very many people are there. But the train station is so tiny. It can only hold two cars.
Riverhead is sporadically big.
I don't, yeah. It's like every building there is much bigger than it needs to be. You know?
Overkill city.
What did we see? We saw the bank. Suffolk County. I've never heard of this bank before. It's named after the county I've lived in all my life, and I don't know this bank. Suffolk County, was it?
SCNB, Suffolk County National Bank.
National Bank, really?
Yeah,
really, Suffolk County? You think they're national?
They think a lot of themselves.
Okay, well, whatever. The building is like 18 stories tall and encompasses acres and acres, and I don't even know where another branch is. It's really, that's something that's a Supreme Court building, which is much bigger than it needs to. What do we need a Supreme Court for in Suffolk County?
I don't know. I think it is where trials are escalated to. In other words, if something is appealed from a local court, it then makes its way up there. It's just like the Regional Justice Center in the Puget Sound or other parts of the country have the same kind of thing. You have like a larger regional court that handles cases that have been already ruled upon in other appellate or other, not appellate, other state courts.
We saw a phone company building that was way bigger than it needed to be as well.
Yeah, they got a really huge central office there. It's cool, though. I love walking around, just bumping into different buildings. The bank is huge.
Yes.
Right downtown.
The other bank, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there is all kinds of things to be explored, and it was fun to walk around a little hidden gem like that.
Yeah, and there's so many hidden gems, whether it's Riverhead, Riverside, or East Setauket, or whatnot. Just gotta explore, look up the history of places too, because that's really fascinating to see what something was 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 100 years ago.
Yeah, you know, and it kind of gives you an idea of how places are evolving. Like, uh-huh. where is this going? You know where it's been. Like, what has kind of been done there? But then you see, okay, so they're doing this, and this is, you know, they're coming in, and then this change is being made here, and, oh, the train museum is still doing all right. You know, you have all these little things.
Hold on, the train museum. I got a bone to pick with them. They're not open until April. We walked up. There's this guy. He's dressed, how do we describe it? He's got suspenders, looks like a conductor.
He's wearing his Oshkosh.
I mean, he's Charlie Choo Choo or whatever. And he tells us, no, we're not open until April. What in God's name are you doing here then at the train museum if you're not open? Well, Tuesday apparently is the day that they do work. And we couldn't see the train museum. But we walked around the rail yards and saw some of the old train cars.
The Museum of Communications has the same policy. They're open on Tuesdays and they have work days. So,
uh-huh.
You know, it's how a lot of these non-profit.
Do they have outfits that they dress up in?
Yes, right. They have shirts. Everybody, their uniform shirts. And, you know, non-profits are quirky like that. In fact, the Museum of Communications has a weekend day now. So maybe the train museum will have a weekend day.
Not till April, they say.
No.
I don't know why you can't have a train museum open in the winter. But
they're working.
They're working, yes, yes. We've been facing away from the phone the whole time. If we don't have a call right now, we should exit delay because Finn is at the door. No, don't do that. Don't do that. You've got to exit delay first.
Right. But I'm having other problems with station here.
You can buy yourself 7 seconds by exiting delay because Yeah. Don't do that. No, don't do that. It just cut us off. Yes.
Sorry, I'm not really paying attention. So let's see. To do this, we have to do...
Switch your headphones and then listen and then talk as
we finish talking.
Yeah, see, that's me live now.
And I'm alive, too. It's a beautiful thing. We're glad that all of you are alive as well. Thank you for listening to Off the Wall today.
Again, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. And we'll probably be here next week. I think we'll be here next week.
Yeah, we'll do what we can to join you at the same time
in a week or so. Until then,
stay tuned for Finn.
And have a good evening.
Mama was queen of the mambo, papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle, I start banging my first bongo. Every monkey like to be in my place instead of me, cause I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. I went to the big town where there is a lot of sound, from the jungle to the city looking for a bigger crown. So I play my boogie for the people of big city, but they don't go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm the king of the bongo. Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Nobody like to be in my place instead of me, cause nobody go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm a king without a crown, hanging loose in a big town. But I'm a king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come. They say that I'm a clown, making too much dirty sound. They say there is no place for little monkey in this town. Nobody like to be in my place instead of me, cause nobody go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm the
king of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come. Banging on my bongo, all that swing belongs to me. I'm so happy there's nobody in my place instead of me. I'm a king without a crown, hanging loose in a big town. I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come. Mama was queen of the mambo, papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle, I start banging my first bongo. Every monkey like to be in my place instead of me, cause I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. Hear me when I come.